Oh, yeah. Another mini episode, another team profile and projection, another 20 minutes with Jake and myself going through this time the Miami Marlins. Hey-o. Yep. You guys voted that they were the fourth worst team in Major League Baseball. Jake, do you think the fans got the vote correct?
Ooh, record-wise, I haven't thought of it. James, got to tell you what, for our 4.5 Marlins listeners, they're about to like what Poppy Gordo has to say. I like some dudes on this team.
Miami Marlins enthusiast, Jake Storielli.
I love the Florida fish, baby.
What's your favorite kind of fish to eat?
Ooh, I grew up in a not very fish-friendly household.
Same, very same. I think that's Italian, like, you know.
My mother hates fish.
Eating or in general?
Live fish. No problem eating fish.
Okay.
There was a situation with my uncle, her older brother, with a live fish that was a little bit of a horrific experience. So live fish were not welcome in my home growing up. I like eating fish, though.
Okay, cool. I had a stuffed halibut in Savannah, and it was delicious.
Just for the halibut?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. All
right. So if we went fishing and we casted a couple lines in a lake and there was a bunch of fish and you caught one, would you hesitate to like take the fish off the rod?
No interest.
So you're not touching the fish?
I mean, maybe I touch it. Maybe I hold it if it's a little guy. But like taking the hook out of its mouth and all that stuff, no interest. Holding it by its like lip, like the trophy pictures, no interest.
Yeah. I have to hype myself up so hard. I'm like, it's just fish. Doesn't have teeth. Like, just put your thumb in there. Nothing bad's going to happen. We should do something with Ploof that's fishing, because I think Ploof is like a man and does fishing stuff. That'd be good content.
One time we went on my uncle's boat and we caught some flounder, and then he was like showing me how like he kills the flounder and slices it open and fillets it and all that. And I was like, oh, I don't care. I have no interest. I have no interest in this.
Speaking of floundering,
the Marlins have been floundering for a while. They have a lot of ex-players in the league that are really, really good. They have.
If they were in another division, I mean, there's four teams that have. The other four teams in their division have legitimate NL East hopes.
Yeah, but yes, but even that, I'm saying, like, if like Yelich, Stanton.
Yeah.
Like, they had a board. They had this group. I don't know if Boar should be in part of that.
No,
but
definitely not.
At one point, they were excited about him. Not in the same elk. But, you know, they had this group that they were like, the future's here. And then it all went away.
I don't know if they redo the Stanton trade, because, I mean, that dude was owed a lot of money, and that goes into Marlins ownership, blah, 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 Jeffrey Loria. The Yelly one, they would have liked maybe watch him be MVP level for half a season, then trade him. There are dudes from that trade who are starting to play for them, but they are not Christian Yelich.
They aren't. But the Marlins made some moves this offseason.
A nice Marlins offseason, Jim.
A step up the ladder. Next rung. They can't see the horizon yet, but they're climbing the wall. They're getting themselves out of the pit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're waiting for the Mets to burn themselves out, which, I mean, this season seems fight or flight for the Mets, and they literally just lost an ownership group. The Nats are going to age out in a little bit, and minus Soto. And then, yeah, I mean, the baby Braves seem like they're going to be around for a little bit, and we'll see what goes on with the Phillies. But, yeah, I mean, the Marlins, you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. A lot of young players. And, yeah, this is, as we've talked about with these kind of rebuilding teams, or however we want to label them in the rebuild, like the Marlins, if a couple things go right this year, whether it's Dickerson, Aguilar, VR, and they can get a couple more assets, I mean, you're starting to get to a 2-year, like, almost competitive plan.
Almost. So let's go through the adds and the drops. They lose Martin Prado, Granderson, and Neil Walker to free agency. They sign those guys on one year, like prove it deals or whatever. Pillow contract. I don't know what you want to call it. They're gone. They picked up. They also got rid of Starlin Castro, is no longer on Miami.
Right.
But they did
162 games, Starling Castro.
162 games last year. Jesus Aguilar, they claimed him off waivers from the Rays. They pick up Jonathan VR. I think that was a trade, like a waiver trade. They picked up Jose Estrada, a catcher. Stephen Tarpley from the Yankees. Corey Dickerson's the big one. Who else, Jake? There's some others that I'm... Well, you know who they got in the minors? Pat Vendette. He can throw with his left hand and his right hand. How about that? Matt Joyce on a one-year contract.
Switch pitcher.
Francisco Cervelli on a one-year contract. Matt Kemp's on a minor league contract. Some pickups, man.
Jim, everyone on this team is either like major league or a young guy with hope. Like, there's no one you're looking at that's like, this dude is a black hole and has no chance. I mean, you know, some of these guys, I mean, Garrett Cooper's not going to get someone excited, but as a bench MLB bat for the Marlins, like, that dude could fill in for a 2-week injury and do really well. Matt Joyce currently listed on the bench. I mean, that guy's a major league baseball player. Cervelli, he's technically the bench catcher right now. So they've got major league players, major league depth. It's going to be interesting to see what young guys take the leap. And like where I started, those MLB dudes that we do know, the Aguilars, Dickerson, and VRs, how can they get off? How much does Miami as an organization like them? And, you know, when deadline season comes, I mean, these guys are in a very similar position to Pittsburgh. Like, we kind of like this lineup. The pitching's not going to be there. And the other four teams in each of those divisions is like really a really good ball club. Yeah. So you have to keep things in a certain scope. But again, that kind of first look at the full Miami lineup, like what I'm seeing.
Well, you talked about Cooper, and first base was a huge platoon for Miami last year. They had, like, Cooper played a bunch, Neil Walker played a bunch, Martin Prado played a bunch, and they bring in Aguilar, who had a bad season after, I think, two good ones or just one good one. I forget. But they bring him in. I think that's going to be a little playoff battle for first that our friend Trevor Plouffe told us isn't real, but could be right in this case. Who knows? So, like, if they just get a guy at every position, that's kind of an improvement, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, think, again, when you're the Marlins, you do have to operate differently. I mean, we're not going to go into the whole ownership spiel, but they clearly are a team that does that. And, I mean, you got VR and Aguilar, two guys that can, you know, put together a baseball season for almost nothing. You signed Dickerson when, you know, he was a free agent. Any team could have had him. So it was a really nice offseason as far as Marlins standards go. And yeah, man, I want to see this lineup, and I'll just burn through it quick in case you don't know. VR's allegedly going to be at third. They want to move him around a lot. Miguel Rojas, shortstop. Brian Anderson listed in right field. That's my guy that I'd probably say, if you don't know him, that's the guy you should know. He's put together a couple nice seasons for a young ball player. Dickerson, Aguilar, Jorge Alfaro behind the plate. He's pretty solid. Eason Diaz. He's a young second baseman. They're hoping he was part of that Milwaukee trade. So is Lewis Brinson, projected to be the center fielder. So they're hoping those are the two young guys that if one of them could figure it out, that would be really huge for the Marlins. Brinson's hitting stats are pretty atrocious. But again, MLB dudes are young guys with hope, which, hey, not bad.
Brian Anderson was pretty good last year. Thoughts?
He's just solid. I mean, it's a tough case of, A, having one of the more generic names you could possibly have.
Yep.
And then, B, yeah, I mean,
also generic looking.
He, you know, fourth in the rookie of the year in 2018. He made a nice step up last year, bumped that OPS 50-plus points, 20 home run guy in only 126 games. But just a really solid ball player. He's Brian Anderson all around. He's a B-plus version of a Brian Anderson.
Wow, that's tough, man. Yeah. Koopaloop hit pretty well for them last year.
I'm telling you, man, the fact that he's listed as a bench guy and maybe they're going to platoon him and Dickerson, because I think Dickerson's got some pretty tough platoon numbers. I mean, this lineup is watchable. Like, we did a couple of the first teams, and it was like, oh, but these Marlins are a watchable ball club.
they got the catcher, Alfaro. Like you said, Cervelli's going to be the backup because that guy is pretty good. He can throw out runners like crazy, and I think he's a really good defensive catcher, and his hitting numbers are good. They're not great. I think he had, like, maybe one walk on the season.
Yeah, he 130 games, 22 walks. But, yeah, 736 OPS in his age 26 season. And you and I, we've mentioned before, but only so many catchers played over a buck 20 games. Alfaro played a buck 30. So that's a really solid year for a young catcher slash just being back there for 130.
You know who I really like?
Who do you really like?
Rojas at short. Just because of the one
saying that.
The one breakdown I made of him last year where he was yelling at the umpire and he was very much like, you have to do your job and respect this game and you have to do the right thing. And that was like the tone of his argument with the ump instead of, that's horse shit. That's fucking horse shit. It's like, you have a job and you need to do it right.
Yeah.
Very genuine. So he's got a fan in me.
You got a fan in me. Should we do that? Is that a good parody song?
Nope. No. What about Birdie? Your dude Birdie.
I'm a birdie man with a digging on the inside. Who are you? Oh, John Birdie, the utility guy? The 20. Yeah, yeah. 30.0, Jim. Did he just have his birthday?
He's fine.
Yeah, I don't have anything on John Birdie, but he had a solid utility season last year. Yeah,
you're just a jerk.
I'm a jerk. Let me see. Let me check the
Before we get to the pitching,
yeah.
Do the pitching first, and then I want to go over potential free agents and trade season stuff.
Do the pitching first. Last thing I want to say in the lineup, Lewis Brinson and Eason Diaz, again, two of the main pieces, along with Jordan Yamamoto, my guy, from
Yamamoto.
The Yelich trade. Brinson and Diaz's hitting stats were atrocious on the major league level. They need one of them to figure it out.
Diaz only had 49 games.
Yeah, still bad. Pitching. They've got a Caleb Smith as the one. I think Alcantara probably gets the pill on opening day. He had a really nice year last year. Caleb Smith, former Yankee farmhand. Jordan Yamamoto, like I mentioned, a piece in the Yelly trade. He got the call last year. Pablo Lopez and Eliezer Hernandez, Rule 5 guy from Houston a couple years ago. Very young pitching staff. And, yeah, I mean, Alcantara put together a nice season last year. It was funny. MLB put out last week or 2 weeks ago the best rotations if you take the best pitcher from each team. And the NL East, it was like, damn, Scherzer, Nola, DeGrom, I forget who, Soroka on the Braves. And then it was like, Alcantara? Throw him out there.
He's okay.
He's okay. What? I mean, what do you need from this pitching staff, Jim? Because it's very young, very unproven. I mean, we need 1.5 guys to have good years.
No, you need a good bullpen.
Yeah,
it's not happening. You need the Marlins. I mean, you know, it's going to be a group effort. Not the starters nor the bullpen is going to carry them.
Yeah.
But Caleb Smith can be good. We've seen him be very scared to throw a 2-strike pitch. It was almost 2 years ago, Caleb Smith didn't have an out pitch. And hitters would just like swing for the fences the first two because they didn't care about getting 2 strikes on them. But he improved. He got a lot better. So that's good. Good for him.
Brutal, brutal finish to the season. He in August and September, he had a 6.39 ERA in both months to finish the season. He was having a really nice year.
Yeah, I was trying to see what he does good because when you watch Caleb Smith, it's hard to figure out what's working.
I mean, he's a lefty. He could pump it a little bit. No third pitch.
His changeup is his third pitch, and he throws it 14% of the time. He throws his fastball 50% of the time.
So I've got a question.
And his changeup gets kind of rocked.
Tough.
He only throws it 14% of the time, and it's got a 346 WOBA, expected WOBA.
36 WOBA. I don't know, man. I'm looking at 5 young pitchers. Let's root for 2 to figure it out. I think that's That's optimistic yet realistic, right?
Okay, so which two are you rooting for? Because I'm rooting for got a phone call.
You know
call
I right love here. Yamamoto. That's
no, so I'm I was about to take him from you and snag you and someone
you know
from
he's my guy.
Someone
I
from
talk
Greenwich
about him on Talking Baseball like every episode for a week.
I know he's your guy. That's why I was going to snag him from you in a snaky move, but someone
it's
called me from Greenwich, Connecticut. And they interrupted my flow of my sentence. And now you have Yamamoto and I have Alcantara. So then who's your second?
And hey, both of those guys could do it maybe. Honestly, I don't know enough about the other dudes. I mean, we've already done enough on Caleb Smith. I mean, Pablo Lopez is young. He's 23. He'll be 24 when the season starts. Eliezer Hernandez, he's 24. I don't know. But yeah, I think Yamamoto and Alcantara, you bet on those dudes. And yeah, the other guys are wild cards for me. I can't speak well enough on them.
Who's the better offseason guy, Dickerson or Cervelli, to add to the clubhouse and the statistics? Dickerson's
It's
Cervelli. It's what I just wanted to get to, talk about how awesome Cervelli is.
Yeah, interesting clubhouse vibes on this team.
I think it's been that way for a while. It's a lot of rookies hoping to get a shot, and they know they're a little earlier than maybe they are, and it's a lot of veterans like – 1 year veterans who the rookies like have to act like, okay, come give us all your advice, Neil Walker. You're a veteran, been doing this forever. What do you have to teach me? But kind of like, also, I don't care.
Yeah, I think if you're on this Miami Marlins team and you want to be a leader, maybe someone like Aguilar or one of the veterans, you do need to have. Before the season, that little break between spring training and the regular season, you need to go out and have a shit show Miami going out night. And that's your team bonding for the year. And you can all point at each other and be like, ah, I remember you were drunk. And that's just your team bonding. And Cervelli keeps that intact. And I think that would be huge for this team going into the season.
Do you know any of the minor league affiliates for the Marlins? How many can you name? If you were a true baseball fan, you could name their Triple A team.
God, I never use them because the Marlins blow. God, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I mean, I could talk to you about Riley Mahan for a while or what Sixto Sanchez could become this year.
No. Well, the answer was the Wichita Wind Surge.
God, that's such a mistake. Wichita to Miami?
Yeah. How are you going to adjust? I mean, you get called up, you're also now going to just, like, party because you were repressed in Wichita.
That's terrible, yeah.
Double A team is the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. And this,
I should have known that one.
The Advanced A is the Jupiter Hammerheads. So if you climb the ranks, you're going from Florida to Florida to Wichita, Kansas, and then to Miami.
Wichita's a huge mistake. That's an organizational flaw, man.
Yeah, you can't. I mean,
you cannot have that,
especially all the Spanish speaking players. You drop them all around Florida. They're having a blast. They're in flow everywhere they go. They find the food they like. Then they make it to AAA. Bam. Wichita. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're I mentioned Sixto Sanchez. That's the guy. I think he might be the biggest. If you are a Marlins fan, I feel like I shouldn't say that, but I do have to say that. He's a pretty good pitching prospect, starting pitcher. I wonder if he's the first injury. It looks like he's going to start in Double A. You'd like to think they have a plan for him, so it's probably not the first injury, but he should get the call this year. And yeah, I mean, Miami is building something. I'm starting to believe maybe it's some Jeter bias coming in, but I don't know. I'm okay with what I'm seeing around the Florida Fish, man.
Their number one prospect is awesome.
Okay. Jazz Chisholm.
Jazz Chisholm from Bahamas.
That was a funny trade this year because Jazz Chisholm, I believe, was in the Diamondbacks organization.
Yeah, he was. Correct. Good knowledge, Jake.
Prospect for prospect. Yeah, Zach Gallen.
Yeah.
You don't normally see that. Normally, dudes, if you're a prospect on a team, that team loves you. So it's kind of a office finger guns gif.
Well, the Brewers and the Padres just did that as well.
Well, wait, your prospect. Well, your prospect. Well, I mean, we like our prospect, but you like our prospect? It's a tricky game.
Well, he's their number one prospect. His name is Jesrado Hermes Arrington Chisholm, and he goes by Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah.
And he's 5'11", 165 pounds, shortstop from the Bahamas. So he's a ways out. No reason for me to bring him up besides I like his name and I like the fact that he's from the Bahamas and I'm rooting for him.
And that's all of those points are fair.
Okay, thank you. What about J.J. Bladé? Oh, that's another fun name. J.J. Bladé?
A great name. It's a great name.
Do you know who that is? He's their second. He's their second best prospect. J.J. Bladé. He's a long ways out as well.
Day Bladé. Yeah, you might see Nick Neidert. I mean, at the end of this season, it would be cool if they could get off to a decent start. You know, maybe have like a 500 April. And then, you know, the wheels are going to come off a little bit. Maybe a trade deadline. And then I mean, it's just going to be an army of young guys trying to figure it out. But, yeah, they've got some AAA arms that are gonna come up this year. Excuse me. Nick Neidert's a decent prospect. He's probably going to get the call at some point. Sixto, as I mentioned, there's a couple other young guys at AAA. So, yeah, I you're hoping to get off to a decent start. So there's a little oomph for the veterans. You know, if they come out the first 2 weeks with like a 2-10 or something like that, you know, it might be tough for Jesus Aguilar to really dial it in. Shots fired, I guess.
Yeah. And speaking of the trade deadline, which you brought up there, these are the potential pieces to watch playing for a trade in their contract year. Francisco Cervelli signed a 1-year deal. Matt Joyce, Jonathan Villar. So those three, especially Cervelli, people always need catchers. People always need catchers at some point in the season. They're always bouncing around. So Cervelli, he's a backup, but still, if a team is like, you know, the Yankees don't have any in their farm system, maybe I think Cervelli has a chance of being grabbed by someone if he shows he's alive. Matt Joyce, all the guys they just got. They're not going to trade any of the prospects.
Any veteran.
Yeah. Who do they open up against, Jake? Do you know? Do you want to know?
No idea.
Do you want them? Do you want to find out they have a hard opening or an easy opening?
I mean, I don't really care about the openings. You're getting pretty tuned into this because I think it's a double-edged sword. You say if they're playing a tough team, you'd be like, well, they're not going to be in mid-season form, or it's a tough start to the schedule. You could go either way on it.
Well, you were the one talking about if they get off to a hot start or a bad start, so I just want to give you what their schedule is. It's pretty rough.
Right. And I'm telling you, the schedule doesn't like that could be a plus for them. Like we said, the Orioles opened with the Yankees last year and took 2 out of 3 because they didn't really get rolling yet.
Well, they have 4 against the Phillies, 3 against the Nationals, 3 against the Braves, 3 against the Nationals, 4 against the Braves. That's their opening stretch.
It's their division, man.
I know.
It's a tough division.
It's a tough division to be in. I'm glad I'm not in it.
I mean, the NL, who are your, like, take a second to breathe teams. It's the Pirates and
they don't
it's
the
Giants.
And they don't play the Pirates until May. They don't play a non-contender until May. Tough
the
April.
The NL's going to be brutal this year.
That's a tough April for the Marlins. And then, then they go visit the NL West and Central a little bit in May. Crazy. That's a tough start. Well, have fun, Miami. Enjoy it.
Have fun.
Jake, last year they went 57-105. They won 57 games. Oh, you dirty dogs, Vegas. You know, yeah. I've been on the under kick, right? And I'm feeling guilty for taking all the unders. I feel like I'm being a fool. I'm going to be wrong eventually. So I was telling myself, I'll take the over on the Marlins. They got some guys. But it's 64.5 games is what Vegas has it as. And we just talked about how brutal their division is. And that's 18 games against 4 teams that when they play the Marlins, they're like, hey, we better fucking win these.
Right.
So I'm taking the under again.
64, huh?
64 and a half.
I was kind of hoping 62. I think if you're a Marlins genuine goal, it's to not lose 100 this year. 64 and a half is tough, man. Especially when there's only two other bad teams in the NL. You know what? I'm feeling lucky, Punk. Give me the over. One NL East team's going to get hit with injuries. And one NL East team is going to have like a sad ending to their season because it didn't come together. So the Marlins will eat up some wins at the end of the year.
That happened last year with the Mets and then the Phillies, and they still only won 57 games.
Dude, the Mets were trying their hardest at the end of the season. They turned it on to win 84 games or whatever it was.
I know, and that
this
the
year
ones
would be deflating. That would be that last year was the buildup for them. Like, we're coming next year. This year, if it doesn't happen, they're going to be sad puppy dogs at the end of the year.
Well, I'm just saying, we started with four teams in it last year, and two bounced.
Right, and I think the Marlins are a lot better. Villar, Aguilar, Dickerson, the young pitchers all get a year older. It's a better team.
I agree, too. I think it's a great line by Vegas. It's a tough one.
And you're just the under guy, so who are you? Have nothing to stand. Oh, my God.
I'm clapping. That was me clapping. I was clapping for Vegas for setting a good over-under.
Maybe.
It will see. It will all play out eventually. Fun fact to close the show about the Marlins. Jordan Yamamoto took up haircutting as a hobby in the minors. He cut his teammates' hair to hone his skills and help them save a few bucks.
Huge.
Thanks, Jordan Yamamoto. Ooh.